Hi, this is Phil Johnson, and I am talking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio. I'm talking about my new show, A Jewish Joke, that's playing in Chicago at the Victory Gardens Theater and is touring around the country, hopefully near you. Thanks for listening.
Oh, shalom, shalom, my friends. Let me tell you a Jewish joke. So a Jew and a non-Jew sit down by telephone to talk to each other about a play. It's a play that's being done in Chicago, and it's called A Jewish Joke. See, I fooled you. It was sort of an ironic non-joke. Sorry about that. But I am not sorry for having our guest in the neighborhood today. He is an actor. He is a playwright. He has been on Broadway, and he will soon be in Chicago, Illinois, to do his play, A Jewish Joke. It's at the Victory Gardens Theater for a couple of weeks, from July 6th through July 31st. Is it a comedy? Is it a show about Yiddishkeit and Jewishness? Well, sort of. It's also about the blacklist and personal responsibility and all kinds of serious stuff like that. So, without further ado or a don't, please welcome to the Kosher neighborhood, Phil Johnson. Shalom, Phil!
Hello, Rabbi. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm, you know, usual aches and pains. How old are you? Do you have aches and pains?
Yes. Yes, I do. You want me to tell you about them?
Well, you're not Jewish, so I'm curious what kind of pains Goyim get. Is it alcoholism?
Oh, well, not alcoholism, no. Probably eating too much cream cheese, you know, and toast and butter. That's what we eat.
That'll do it. Yep. That'll do. Well, I put a lot of cream cheese on the locks and things, so I hear you. But you don't have, like, hemorrhoids or polyps or anything like that.
Wow. I don't know if I've ever been asked that question in an interview. I'm going to submit it in writing, and I'll let you know the answer that way.
Interesting how you qualify that. You've never been asked that question in an interview. Have you been asked that question on a date?
Have I ever? Well, perhaps at the doctor's, yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, I have.
Good, good. Now, one thing that does shock and disturb me somewhat is that, God bless you, you've written this play about a Jew, but you yourself are not a Jew. What happened? Why not?
I don't know. I'm lost, Rabbi. I'm looking to convert. No, actually, what happened is I just always loved Jewish humor growing up as a kid.
Good.
And a lot of times I didn't realize what it was until I think when I was sometime listening to Woody Allen and Joan Rivers, and I realized, oh, that's what I love. I've been loving all my childhood is Jackie Mason, this kind of humor. And so I fell in love with it. I mostly write comedy plays. I perform comedy roles in Southern California, and I used to in Chicago, and then on Broadway and touring around the country. But I loved it so much, and I was looking for a way to put my love of Jewish humor out there. I also live a fairly Jewish life. My partner is very Jewish.
So you are gay?
Yes.
Oh, mazel tov. Okay, congratulations. So that's why you're in theater. Of course, you're gay. They're gay and Jewish.
You know,
you hit the double there.
Hegelist, that's what we do, you know.
Right. How long have you been with your partner?
About 25 years.
Oh, mit mazel. So wait a minute. It's legal now. Are you going to put a ring on it?
You're kidding.
And by it, I mean his penis. No, I'm kidding. But are you going to get married?
Yes, we have a ring. We have a ring on it, so to speak. We've got the whole enchilada, Rabbi. But he is a kind of a super Jew. He's, you know, he was the president of his shul, on about 10 boards in Southern California for Jewish causes. I have lived kosher for the last 25 years. I'm probably more kosher than you.
Definitely. I just had a ham sandwich this morning.
Yeah, well, you know.
But let me ask you then, if you're living this Jewish life, with a nice Jewish boy that you married, or recently married, but have been with for 25 years,
yeah.
Why haven't you thought, maybe have you thought of actually converting?
I believe that there's not so much religion in my life. I am a enormous lover of the Jewish culture and traditions and the way how important education is. And also, really, the way humor translates into a very pragmatic way of living.
Ooh.
A way of getting through day-to-day difficult things. And I think humor is pretty much the tip, but the giant tip of that iceberg. The sense of humor gets...
It's the uncircumcised tip of the iceberg, in fact.
Oh, wow.
Yes, yes, it is.
I wasn't going to go there, but luckily you did. Yes.
Thank you, yes. So what are some struggles and stresses that you've had in your life that you haven't had Hashem, God, to turn to, since I guess you're kind of an atheist?
I was raised Catholic, but I kind of let that go somewhat in my life.
Okay.
But I think Judaism kind of, if I was going to go somewhere, I would pull my car into that garage, so to speak. But I find that religion, to me, is something that I like to do with meditation.
Okay.
And I take little snippets of this and that, and I like to find on my own.
What stresses and troubles?
Oh, stresses and struggles. Well, being an actor, there's stress for you right there. You're kind of a used car salesman. You know, you're constantly looking for the next job. Even when I was doing the play on Broadway or doing tours, you're always looking for the next show. So this new part of my life is writing shows about characters that I really care about and hopefully will leave the audience with something to take home with them. I'll tell you that I think a reason I turned to the Jewish sense of humor, especially growing up, was I lived in a fairly mirthless house.
Ooh.
So, yes. So
what were your parents? Were they worried about things? Were they just waspy or Catholic-y or what? Yeah.
Irish Catholic.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So there comes the alcoholism. No, I kid.
Wow.
But
I don't even drink, but I think I'm going to take up alcoholism now because you've said it.
And you might as well. Either that or just
genetic
guilt.
Imperative, isn't that right? Since I'm Irish, I probably should.
So your parents were just gloomy and doomy all the time?
A lot of that, and my sense of humor was something that got me through a lot. My dad is a comedian. He's not.
Wait a minute. You just said
separated.
You had a mirthless upbringing, a mirthless parents there, and now you're saying your dad was a comedian?
Well, my parents were separated. I'm sorry to make that clear.
Okay,
and
so
I mostly lived with my mother and my mother's family.
Okay.
And my grandparents were, you know, a little dour from that generation that had gone through the Depression. So Jewish humor was a way I could handle it. You know, I would always try to make things lighter. I was that guy.
I get it. Can I ask you, is your dad still alive?
Yes, he is. I'm actually at his house right now. I'm staying with him. He lives in Chicago.
Oh, my mazel.
So this worked out great. The theater is literally around the corner from me, Victory Garden.
Wonderful. Now, was he semi-known? I mean, how much success did he have as a comedian?
Oh, no, he worked for a big company, but he's a very funny guy, and he likes to tell jokes. And I was never good at telling the jokes like he was, but I always loved...
All right, you have to tell me, I'm going to give you two options, all right? You can either tell me one of your father's favorite jokes to tell, or if he's in the house, go get him and let him tell the joke.
Well, I'll tell you, one of my favorites of his was the Pope, right?
I've heard of him.
The Pope is a good butt of many jokes. The Pope comes out at St. Peter's Square and he says, "Oh, my children, hello and God bless. I found that my heart, it's not so good. It's about my time to go and see God." And so all the people down in the square saying, "Papa, Papa, take my heart. And he said, no, I gotta go, it's my time. Oh, Papa, take my heart." So just then, a bird flies over the square, and a feather is falling from the bird. And the Pope says, "Oh, Madonna, Malazula, it's a miracle. Whoever the feather falls on, I'm gonna take the heart of that person." So everybody in the square is screaming, "Papa, take my heart." And then they put their lips together and start to blow.
That's pretty good.
That was the only joke of my father's that I could tell.
Oh, all right. That was good. That was, you know, you got the Italian Catholic accent there.
Realistic.
Yeah. We're talking, by the way, with Phil Johnson here in the neighborhood. He is the author and star of the solo play A Jewish Joke, which is going to be playing at Chicago's Victory Gardens Theater starting late this week, July 6th through the 31st. So we haven't really had time yet to talk about the play itself. It's about a man during, what, the 1950s?
Mm-hmm. In about 1950, and he's a very, very funny guy. A comedy screenwriter at MGM in 1950s Hollywood. But he's always been kind of schlepping through life, you know?
I know. Believe me, I know.
He had to stand up to anything. And at that moment, he's very interested in succeeding. He's doing very well. He's about to have a big Hollywood premiere. And it comes up that his writing partner, he has a writing partner that he's gone through most of his career with since New York. And they spent time in the Yiddish theater. And his partner is found out to be connected to the Communist Party. And in more and more disturbing ways, he finds out through the course of the play. So he has to make a decision. And the FBI knows about this. So he has to make a decision, finally. What is he going to stand up for? Is he going to stand up for his friend, or is he going to tell the FBI and the studio the things they want to know? And so now he has to either become his own conscience or deny it and keep going the way he's gone and see how that works. So it's a very, very funny play, and it turns at the end when he has to make the decision.
Well, I can imagine. Now, it is a solo play. It's just you up there. Are you playing all the characters in different ways, or is it always you?
It's always me. His name is Bernie Lutz.
Okay.
I thought that was a good... It's kind of modeled after my partner's Uncle Bernie, who was himself kind of an amateur comedian.
Okay. Aren't we all? Yeah.
We all are. So he is just kind of a schlepper kind of guy, going through life, very funny.
I hope Bernie isn't listening, you know.
No.
You just call him a...
He's actually gone.
Okay.
He's gone, yeah. But
where do you go?
So I love this idea of the everyday reluctant hero. You know, he's just an everyday guy, and
he may or may not be a hero. We find out at the end of the play whether he does something heroic or he saves his tush.
Right, that's right. Thank you. Not giving away. Oh, spoiler alert. Thank you.
No, I wouldn't do that, of course. I would not. So, how long did it take you to develop A Jewish Joke, the play?
I've actually been working on this for a couple of years. I first debuted it. It started at a contest at the Jewish Community Center in La Jolla. They were having a contest, and I thought, oh, I can write something, and I did, and that's where it started. And then I premiered this at the La Jolla JCC last October.
And it was complete? Because I think I read somewhere that the initial thing was a 5-minute play contest or something, no?
Yes, it was. That's how it started.
So you did it in 5 minutes? Boy, that's quick.
I stretched 5 minutes to 2 hours, yeah.
Oh, that helps, yeah.
A lot of pausing. Now, myself and my writing partner, a wonderful woman, screenwriter named Marnie Friedman.
Oh, forgive me, that's right. You co-wrote the play with someone else.
Right.
It's Marnie Friedman is the co-writer. You are in it by yourself. Forgive me, yes.
Yes.
And so you worked on it after the contest and you developed it fully. And you have done the play already one or two other places, yes?
I have, several places in San Diego. And so it's gone very well where we did it. So I'm really hoping that people take to it here, because it's something that means a lot to me. He's a wonderful, wonderful character, and you can't help but love him and feel for him as he goes through something really difficult.
Now, you have done one or two other one-person plays, right?
I have. I have done, actually, many.
Oh, many. Okay. I mean, and of your own devising, not just appearing in other people.
Of my own. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I also did a play that was off-Broadway a couple years ago called Mistakes Were Made, and that was basically a one-person play, and then the part of my secretary was off stage, and then she comes in to save me right at the end.
Okay,
so I'm used to doing a lot of things that are very heavy on text.
Hmm. May I ask how old you are?
I'm 56.
56. Has it gotten easier or harder or the same remembering and doing a full evening with essentially no one to cue you? You're up there alone.
Right. Because I write a lot of my stuff, I'm very familiar with a lot of the things, you know, I write. But it's always hard memorizing. That is the cost of performing. The cost of performing is memorizing it. Hmm. So I took about 3 weeks to sit down with this and really just do that. Staple myself to the couch and memorize 55 pages of text.
Involved. I mean, I know when I have to memorize things, I walk around. I can't do it sitting down.
Yeah. Whatever you do to get yourself to memorize, that's what you do.
And do you self-direct, or do you eventually...
No, I had a great director. My director here, his name is David Chack. He's in the. He's a teacher at DePaul University.
Ooh.
And he is also very involved in the Jewish community. My original director was a man named David Ellenstein, who's the artistic director of North Coast Repertory Theater.
Ooh.
In San Diego, where I perform a lot. So, see, I'm very, you know, I'm very at home in the Jewish world.
Good, as well you should be. I'm still pushing the conversion thing. You know, think about it.
I know. All it takes is that one little...
It does.
...little pin movement.
Now, I want to ask you, speaking of Jewish community, you were in a show, I am curious about this show, just from the title, called Under the Chuppah. What was that?
Wow, how did you find out about that?
I have my ways.
You have your ways. Oh, I see. Like the FBI.
Pretty much in the
yeah,
communist part,
yeah. That was something I wrote with some ladies who brought me this play, and they wanted to do the next Tony and Tina's Wedding. So we wrote this hilarious thing that was very, very funny. It was like a Tony and Tina's Wedding, but it was under the chuppah, and I played the Jewish father in the play.
Uh-huh.
And there was lots and lots of characters. Unfortunately, it was too unwieldy to do anything with. There were 12 people in it.
Well, that's what Tony and Tina's is. Grandma Sylvia's funeral had that many people in it. You have to if it's interactive.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right, but I don't think they really had the wherewithal or really the patience to go through the stuff that you have to go through to actually get something produced, either in New York or a smaller city like San Diego. So we started doing it at synagogues, and it was a very, very funny piece, and people loved it, but
it was just too much.
They reached the end of their road with that.
Now, speaking of the road, I have to ask, since you're making a life, at least portion of your life, in the theater, and you're not even doing it in New York, has that been a further struggle, or you reached the end of your road in New York?
I am at a kind of a great place in San Diego, in that I've been performing there for years, and I get to be the Nathan Lane of San Diego.
Whoa.
You know? So I'm lucky in that producers and directors often listen to me when I come to them with something. I have a kind of a reputation as also a producer.
Mm.
So I will sometimes put things together. I'm going to be producing a play that I wrote with another Jewish writer. We're doing a two-man version of Wuthering Heights.
Wuthering?
Called Wuthering Heights, and we both play all the characters in it.
Okay.
That will be this spring at the San Diego Repertory Theater.
I mean, have you Jewified them? Is it like Heathcliffowitz? Is that what you're doing? Or?
Heathcliffowitz. No, actually, we play them exactly like they are. But, of course, the difference is it's two slightly schlubby, dumpy character men playing, you know, the most romantic, handsome people of the Gothic romance novel era. So it's me, this dumpy guy with a big wig of hair playing Heathcliff, and him, this kind of shorter, funny guy, playing the beautiful Catherine.
Oh, boy. It sounds like fun.
Let's say it's pretty funny.
Yeah, no, it actually does sound like fun. But I also want to move back to New York, because you did reach one of the big goals of a New York actor who can sing. You made it to Broadway. Not everybody does. You did get on Broadway. You were in Les Mis.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't in the original cast thing, but you were a cast replacement and an understudy, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did the third national tour first, and then they took me to the Broadway company, and then I did the first national tour of Miss Saigon.
Oh, wow.
Chicago. And then I did the Canadian companies of Sunset Boulevard.
Now,
I did those for a long time. And then what happened is, hopefully no one's listening, is they were auditioning me for Cats. And I knew the drill. I had been through this. It was about my third audition. And I knew I was going to be in Cats. So at some point I just went, I can't do this. And I left and I went to the West Coast. So that was my moment where I went, I can't do this anymore. I have to do something with a sense of humor and something that's my own. I've kind of created my own little fiefdom, I would say, in San Diego, and I'm very happy with the people I get to work with. And last year we brought a show that I co-wrote Tarantulas from Outer Space in 3D.
By the way, you kind of glossed over the title of that. It's not Tarantulas, it's She-Rantulas. Yeah, oh God. What is the plot of She-Rantulas from Outer Space?
Well, that's a very funny show.
I hope so. It's an O'Neill tragedy. I imagine it's a funny show. Okay.
Yeah, it's right next to Long Day's Journey and Tonight.
Right, yes. Or Charlotte's Web, for that matter, yeah.
No, it's basically, can I say the word bastardization?
Oh, hell yeah.
Can I? Okay.
It's a son of a bitchization, yes.
Yes, of the play Bad Seed, and we totally revamped it so that it's kind of the Bad Seed meets the Invaders from Space. And a mother has to deal with the fact that she realizes her daughter is a space alien and wants to kill the entire world.
Well, that's not good.
And I played the mother.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
All right.
Well, you know, like you do, dumpy older comic men play mothers.
Mothers, there you go. Okay.
There you go.
Where did that play, by the way, She-Rantulas from Outer Space?
Yeah, well, it was such an odd title, and actually people always kind of loved it, you know? It was kind of based on those movies. Tarantula! Exclamation point.
Oh, yeah. You know? Did you in California? Did you do outside, L.A. in that area?
Yes, we did it 2 years in a row at a theater in California for the Halloween season. And then we took it to the New York Fringe Festival.
Oh.
And we did very well. We got very good notices, and we got something in the New York Times. And then we got a publishing deal from it. So it was, it worked out very, very well.
Nice. Very nice indeed. We are talking with Phil Johnson, the actor and the director. I'm sorry, the actor and the playwright and producer to some extent. Can I ask you, just a little more about Broadway? Because I can understand why you did not want to be in Cats, because it's Cats.
Yes.
But when you were doing the tours of other musicals and being on Broadway playing Thénardier in Les Mis, was there that goal, if I just do this one more show, I'll move up another level, I'll get a lead role, I'll get a big character part, or did you realize it was always going to be chorus, or ensemble, as it were?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a lot of what I'm doing right now is I have big plans for especially a Jewish joke to get back to New York. I plan to either bring it to a festival, if I get enough notice from the solo festival, to bring it off Broadway, or somehow I'm looking to get almost all of the work I'm putting together back to New York, because that's something too. I don't think there's a lot of room when you're in ensemble to move up unless you do something large and noticeable. And that's not really what all of this has been for, but I realized the last couple of years that maybe I could do things of my own back off Broadway. And that's been the goal for me.
Would you self-produce? Or are you looking for money?
Well, I think I'd be looking for someone else to produce it with me. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about the New York scene to take my hand at that, although I've done things like that in San Diego. But I'm slowly meeting more and more people there. It's like I come back home to Chicago, where I haven't been for 20 years, and I don't know all the publicity people, I don't know the people who run the theaters, I don't know people like you, you know, so in San Diego, I can do that with a couple of phone calls and some email, but here...
I gotcha. I understand. And also, Chicago theater, I mean, especially the last couple of years, there were a lot of deaths and a lot of changes and turnover. They went through sort of a turmoil period about a year or two ago.
Yes. Sorry, there's a phone ringing in the background right now.
Let it go! Now, what's more important, me or a telephone?
Oh, I'm not going to pick it up.
Damn right you're not. Phil Johnson here in the neighborhood with us. Now, some of the people, you had mentioned that you were very influenced by Jewish humor early on in what you do. But in another interview, you also mentioned some other people who influenced you. Folks that you saw on television when you were growing up, like Carol Burnett, yes?
Carol Burnett, yes. How do you leave her out? She's fantastic. Jackie Mason, people like Flip Wilson was one of my favorites.
You had mentioned Bill Cosby. I guess you won't mention him anymore.
Which one?
Bill Cosby.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's unbelievable. I used to listen to him as a kid. My dad had all his records, and I would listen to that over and over. And now what do you do with that?
Exactly.
Wonderful part of growing up, but I don't know exactly how, where to put that in my life.
Now, one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about your life, and this sounds like a wonderful thing to do, and yet you're not doing it anymore. You used to run a cabaret, like, nightclub thing, didn't you?
Yes.
In Chicago.
You know everything about me.
Well, you know, a little bit of Googling. I love Google.
A little Googling.
So
we used to have a nightclub here on Lincoln Avenue. It's very much an entertainment street here in Lincoln Park in Chicago. And for 3 years, we ran a cabaret called Boombala. And it was
wonderful. Like Boombala with an M. Boombala.
Boombala.
Even that's so Jewish.
It was, yeah. I'll tell you what the name came from, if you'd like.
Please.
Did I? Okay, because it's a little Jewish.
Please,
my good. Sister at the time was working in a store, and there would be people who would come in with, she was working in a very expensive clothing store, and there would be people who would come in with lots and lots of money and no taste, and they would call them Boombalas.
Now, was that just among them, or was like an Urban Dictionary thing that...
No, they made up that word.
They made it up, wow.
That little word. And it was close to Boombala, so we kind of loved it, and we kept it. We never really told anyone what the meaning of the word was. But that's another reason people liked it, because it was such an odd word.
Boombala, no, I love it. But the idea to open up how many seats, how many people could you fit on a given...
It could fit about 70, so Ooh. It was small.
Okay.
You know, but it was very elegant, and my mother created the menu, and... My sister and I performed in a small group that had been performing for years around cabaret in Chicago called Good Company, and we did nicely. We had been recognized, and once we got into the nightclub, then a lot of great good things happened for us performing in that world. But, you know, I was also running the nightclub.
Right.
And doing all of that, so I learned a lot about entertainment business. Doing that. It did just fine, and then three years was it. That was the end of it.
All right, wait. First of all, what is something that you learned about the business of entertainment from running the nightclub Boombala?
The business of entertaining, the challenge, really, of doing something like that, and that has always stuck with me as I do other things to keep performing, is you have to find yourself a balance. Because what happens is that you end up running the club, and it becomes more and more, and you get away from the original idea of what you opened the play or what you did the venture to do, which is to perform and to share with people and enjoy that time with them. So that was the challenge, is making sure you don't get yourself in so deep that you forget the creation that sparked the whole idea in the first place.
So... What happened to it? I mean, it wasn't just you running it. It was your family. Did they step away?
My family. And it after the first blush of, like, the first articles and everything that came out about it, in the third year, it started to go downhill. And it was just the best decision for all of us to not do it anymore. But it was such a great time, and it was something that taught me so much in performing, because I had to get up and be funny and entertain every day. Every day when I was, how old was I at that point? 27 or something. So I got used to making something out of nothing instantly. That became the best thing of my performing, was that I just got used to just coming in into a space, you know?
Now, can I ask you, that leads to another question, since you've done so much of that and also improv in your mm-hmm. career, and certainly your early career, is it... better, worse, just playing different, more or less fun, now that you are physically writing scripted material that you have to memorize? Do you miss that sort of getting up on stage, give me an idea, where's Ryan Stiles, go?
Yeah, well, I love writing. I love writing. I love making, I love tinkering. I love getting up and doing it. My show is 6 nights a week, but when you're in a bigger show, 8 nights a week. And eight shows a week, and you make it a little different, a little better, a little more, a little of this, a little of this, finding a deeper place to comedy, finding it, and that's really what I've come to love, more than the instantaneous stuff. So I love writing now, but writing is all about coming up with it on the fly. So that's where I put most of that, and now the artistry of it, I hope, for me, is getting up on stage and making it perfect, and really communicating with the audience, because I personally, because of my years in nightclubs, love, like, connecting with an audience, really connecting with an audience. Like, we're on the same wavelength. I love that.
Is it tough for you to cut when you have a first or second draft? Is it, do you go through and just, like, killing your children, or can you be more objective and go, well, they're just not going to laugh, or that takes us away from the arc, as it were?
Yes. You're obviously, do you write things, too, as a comedian?
Well, I'm a rabbi first and a comedian second. But yes, no, I did a show called Shalom Dammit, an evening with Rabbi Solomon.
Shalom Dammit.
Yes, Shalom Dammit. You should see it. It's brilliant. Look it up on YouTube. D-A-M-M-I-T. Shalom Dammit. And it's an evening with me singing and talking and arguing and screaming and hurting people. I'm serious. We did it in New York back in 2012. I've done it in Colorado for Goyim. It works for all sorts of people.
Uh-huh.
And then there are other people who want to kill me, but yeah.
I love that title. I love it.
Well, thank you. Don't steal it. It's mine. Thank you.
But, yeah, I may have to steal it. You know, that's what comics do. That's
I know, but I know people who can hurt you. So, but seriously, then. I know when we were first, the first version of the show, Shalom Dammit, was just over when we did it, was about 2 hours and 20 minutes long with intermission. And I thought every word was gold, every line,
oh,
I didn't
want
to cut, I just thought it was brilliant, and then winnowing, winnowing, winnowing. By the time we did our last iteration of the show, we did it in Colorado, it was a one act, and it was down to 85 minutes. And they loved it, and I missed what I cut, but I knew you had to do it. How has that been for you with A Jewish Joke and some of the other things that you've written?
Well, the good thing is, as I've become old and creaky, as I am, I've learned a lot more about writing and structure. And if something doesn't serve the story or the world, it's got to go. And I've gotten much, much better. I used to think, oh, this is the funny thing, I have to keep this. No, you can't. You have to let it go. So I've gotten much, much better at that. Because if you're a writer and you're a person who does a lot of things in an improv fashion instantaneously, you will come up with something else. But it has to serve the story that you're telling. And as an actor, and I've started to direct too, I have been able to look at stories from all sides and make certain that it's really giving something to the audience. You're really sharing something with them, not just talking at them, you know?
I could not agree. I guess I could agree more, but it would only be a very small percentile of more-age. Now, here's another question. Apart from Bumble, and when you were on Broadway and having a steady paycheck and touring in those big musicals, have you ever had to deal with a day job in your adult life? Do you have one now?
Or
That's fantastic. How do you manage?
Here and there. Well, like I said, you see, I've done about a million things. So I'm always able to either direct or act, or I am in some kind of what they call industrial show. Do you know what those are? You
tell our audience.
Agencies will put together shows for a corporation, either to entertain their salespeople or to thank people who've done a great job, you know, or things like that. And they are somewhat like small reviews or a small sketches, or even almost to like a little musical celebration. So you end up doing a lot of things, and especially in Southern California, if you're not specifically doing film, you do a lot to keep yourself going. And I've been able to be a chameleon most of my life and just keep learning. And that's the thing that actually I love about it, that it's never boring. Nothing in my life is boring.
Have you ever done the pilot season madness thing since you're over there?
I was at three years at the Acme Comedy Theater in Los Angeles, which is like the slightly less pretty sister of the Groundlings.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. And so I did that for 3 years, and I was realizing, as I would write funny sketches, I would do funny characters, that they were really looking at the younger people around me. And I realized, that moment may have gone already. So I kind of have gone back into my life in San Diego, sometimes in L.A., and I create things that I specifically want to do, you know, that are specifically going to be great for me to do and others. I have very talented friends, and I love to put things together with a wonderfully talented cast of characters that I know. And so that's the way I do it. I just keep putting it wherever I can.
In the manner of speaking, yes.
Yes. Oh, isn't that? Oh, didn't that sound nasty?
Yeah, that goes back to before you met your partner, I'm sure. But you know.
Yeah.
I kid. We've been talking with Phil Johnson. Please go see him. Or and appearing in his own play, which he wrote. I'm sorry, was from Mira Feldman, Friedman.
Marnie Friedman.
Marnie Friedman. Sorry, and it's a Jewish name. I should have remembered it. Marnie Friedman co-wrote A Jewish Joke, which is playing at the Victory Gardens Theater, very respectable, long-running venue in Chicago. It's running from July 6th through the 31st. But hey, if you're not in New York, if you're not in Chicago, it's all right. Just wait a couple of months, because on September 17th, is it just one performance, or are you doing it a couple of times in New York?
Just one performance. It's a contest.
One performance at the United Solo Festival of A Jewish Joke, and then, hey, he's going to try and bring it around to all other places in America so we can all see this play by Phil Johnson. I want to thank you very, very much for joining us in the neighborhood. And our last question for you is there a role that you've always wanted to play that you haven't had the chance to that you think you might in the next 10, 20 years?
Oh, well, if you're going to make me do that, sure.
Sure, I
really would love to play Bialystok. The producers.
Oh, Bialystok. I can see that. Not Bloom, but Bialystok. You think you're more that type?
I think so. I'm much more of a controlling kind of, you know, bulldozer, get out of my way kind of thing. That's my personality. So that would be great. Or if I had two pseudolists in Forum. So if there are any producers out there, maybe you could put in a word for me.
So you're basically, as you said, the Chicago Nathan Lane. So if they do sometimes the Frogs. Or, let's see, what else has he been in? Some Terrence McNally plays You're the Dude.
Terrence McNally. Love, Valor, Compassion. Several. He did The Man Who Came to Dinner. He was hilarious in that.
Well, wait, you have said that you have done Monty in that. Isn't that your favorite role ever to play?
Yes, it is. I don't know exactly how that happened, but I will guess that it's because we must have a very similar sensibility, because I am something on stage I love to do is be that guy who's, you know, pushing everyone around. I have a very strong phone ringing in my ear.
That's true. But I know to be, you know, sort of dark and funny but pushy. Honestly, really, you're so close to Jewish at this point.
I know it. It's, I'm changing it to Johnson Berg.
Can I ask, are you very tight with money?
No, I'm not.
Oh, good. Can I borrow some? I'm kidding.
Hey, when are we going on the road, you and I? That's what I want to know.
Hey, I've got my show. You've got yours. They fit together. You never know. It could happen. We'll keep in touch.
It could happen. We'll write a sequel. Shalom Booby.
No, Shalom Bumby. There you go. For Bumbala, Shalom Bumbi. Well, I want to wish you shalom and health and happiness and good things and success with your play, A Jewish Joke. Thank you, Phil Johnson, for being with us in the neighborhood.
Thank you, Rabbi Saul.
Shalom to you.
Shalom.